Mr. Chairman and friends. At present, as most of you know, week by week, we are pursuing, treading in imagination if not in actual fact, the Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path. And each week we are considering, we are discussing, even at the end asking questions about one step or one stage or one aspect of that Eightfold Path. We've already dealt with the first stage or the first aspect, the beginnings of the path, in terms of perfect vision, and we've also dealt with the second stage, the second aspect, perfect emotion, usually known as right resolve. We've seen, and I think by this time we've understood quite clearly, quite definitely, that perfect vision, with the arising of which entry upon the Eightfold Path takes place, is not just an intellectual understanding, however clear, however profound, of Buddhism. It's something much more than that. It really consists, we may say, in an insight into an experience of the true nature, the real nature, the ultimate nature of existence itself. In fact, though we speak in terms of perfect vision, we may say that this term covers something which is more of the nature of a spiritual experience. It may be momentary, it may come, as it were, in a sort of flash of insight, but it's something much more real, something much more direct, more intimate, more personal, more true than an intellectual understanding. This experience, this perfect vision, we can express and even communicate in various ways, principally in two ways, in terms of pictures, in terms of images, and in terms of concepts. And we saw that traditionally in Buddhism, the Buddha's and his followers' vision of the nature of existence is communicated, is expressed in terms of the great images of the wheel of life, of the mandala, the sacred circle of Buddhas, or images of enlightenment, and the path, the way, which lies between, leading from the one to the other. Conceptually speaking, in terms of ideas, in terms of thought, in terms of philosophy, that perfect vision finds expression in such well-known formulae as the Four Noble Truths, the Three Characteristics of All Conditioned Existence, and so on. I don't want to go into all this again. I don't want to have to recapitulate in detail. I just want to refresh the memories of those who did hear these two earlier lectures. But whether we speak of, whether we express our perfect vision of the nature of existence in terms of images which appeal to the imagination or in terms of concepts which appeal to the intellect, both reveal in one way or another, through their respective medium, a glimpse, an actual insight, or as I said also, an experience of ultimate reality, however brief, however momentary, however, as it were, evanescent that may be. But that isn't enough, as we also saw. It's not enough just to have this vision. It's not enough that it should arise and transfigure us just for a moment or two. It has to descend. It has to descend into each and every aspect of our lives. It has to penetrate, as it were, into every limb. It has to not only transfigure, it has to transform our entire living, every level, every aspect. This is, incidentally, I didn't touch upon it in previous weeks, but it occurs to me just now, this is, incidentally, the significance of what we call mudra in Buddhism. A mudra is a gesture made with the hand or a certain position taken by the fingers. And very often in Buddhism we speak in terms of three things. We speak in terms of samadhi, we speak in terms of mantra, we speak in terms of mudra. So Samadhi represents the inner spiritual realization, mantra the expression of that in terms of speech, and mudra the expression of that same thing, that same realization, right down, as it were, to the very tips of one's fingers. In other words, the outermost ramifications of one's being in terms of mudra, or manual sign, as it's sometimes called, or magic gesture. It isn't anything magical at all. It's something quite spiritual or transcendental. But it conveys the same sort of idea, that our perfect vision, our spiritual realization, is not to be kept on, not confined to the heights, but it's got to descend into the depths of our being and transform and transfigure every aspect, every department, every compartment even, of our lives. And when our lives are transformed in this way, at every level, in every aspect, in accordance with that perfect vision, that insight into our experience of the truth, then comes what we call enlightenment. Now, perfect emotion, as we saw last week, the second step or stage or aspect of the path, represents the descent of this perfect vision into our emotional life. It represents the transformation, if you like, the sublimation of our crude, unrefined emotional energies into something much more delicate, much more rarefied, something, if we may use the term, much more spiritual. Negatively, this perfect emotion consists in complete freedom from attachment, from hatred, from cruelty. And positively, it consists, as we saw in some detail last week, in emotions, positive emotions, such as generosity, the impulse to give, to share, love, compassion, sympathetic joy, in fact happiness in general, and finally faith and devotion. Transfigured by perfect vision, our emotional life assumes this sort of complexion, this sort of colouring.